On the website catholicsupply.com, there are literally hundreds of religious gifts that you can purchase for your family or friends. And as best I can tell, it's kind of an oriental trading company of religious items, most of which are some combination of cheap, precious, tacky, sentimental, or baffling. This is your go-to spot for life-size plastic nativity figures, for example. And where else could you find a collectible plush Pope Francis doll? Or the Count Your Blessings wine glass? It's either a treasure trove or a shop of horrors, depending upon your taste and your capacity for irony. But the item that I want to highlight today is from the best sellers list. It's called the Soccer Jesus Sports Statue. The website description reads, "To remind children that Jesus is with them always, a contemporary statue for today's youth. Jesus is with us in everything we do, watching over us and involved in all of our acts and activities. As seen on the Conan O'Brien show, only $21.95. The statue itself rests upon a small circular wooden base that is topped with a patch of AstroTurf, and there are three plastic figures running across the field, each jockeying for a soccer ball that is rolling across the foreground. A little boy and girl approach from the right. They are wearing regulation cleats and blue and pink jerseys, respectively, in case you were unclear about their gender. Jesus cuts in from the left. He's wearing flip-flops and a classic white robe, in case you were unclear about his Jesus-ness. And if you look closely, you can also see that Jesus' elbow is cocked out at a somewhat sharp angle, spelling trouble for the boy on the left in particular. Now look, it's easy enough to make fun of the Soccer Jesus Sports statue. I believe I just did it. And I have to admit that it seems unlikely that Conan O'Brien featured it on his show in order to remind the children of the world that Jesus is with us in everything we do. It's easy to mock Soccer Jesus, but I can guarantee that it was not intended to be a joke. And I know this because my best childhood friend had a picture of Soccer Jesus on the wall in his bedroom. And as children, it never struck us as funny at all. Nor were we troubled by theological questions such as, which team does Jesus play for? And why does the other team even bother? Or why doesn't he play for an adult league? Or why doesn't the coach put him in the goal since everyone knows that Jesus saves? As children, we were smart enough not to get tangled up in that kind of fundamentalism. The point was simple. Jesus wants to spend time with us. Not just in Sunday school where we struggle to sit still and not fidget with our clip-on neckties, but in our infinitely more exciting actual lives. We didn't have to sit on a special Bible story mat and listen to Jesus drone on about do's and don'ts. Jesus wanted to play with us. And this is actually fairly radical stuff if you let it bleed beyond the kids' table, if you take it seriously. Most adults, even many Christians, scoff at the notion that Jesus accompanies them through their everyday life. It requires a much higher level of integration between the secular and the sacred than most of us practice. And many of us are also understandably uncomfortable with the notion that Jesus is, quote, involved in all of our acts and activities. Enough said about that. Another reason the statue strikes people as ridiculous, I think, is that it seems like a poor use of Jesus' time. Look at Pope Francis, for example. He will kick off his trip to the United States this week with a mass on the steps of the Philadelphia Art Museum for upwards of 1 million people, followed by a visit to the United Nations and an address to the joint sessions of Congress. Surely Jesus maintains a similar schedule. And how many people will die on the operating table, one wonders, while Jesus is playing soccer with children? Maybe more insidiously, some of us simply struggle to believe that we are worthy of Jesus' time and attention. And sure, maybe in the children's soccer league where everyone gets a trophy, even that one kid, it makes sense that Jesus would lavish his attention there because children are innocent, right? Well, I'm going to go ahead and say what I know many of you are already thinking. Children are not innocent. And some of them are actually downright awful. There was a 10-year-old girl I once knew in South Boston. Let's call her Janice. She and her little brother were campers in a summer program that I directed. And the other staff members and I started calling her Hurricane Janice because she blew through the front doors of the church like a hurricane, leaving a wake of destruction in her path. She cursed like it was an art form, stringing profanities together in new and strange ways that I had never heard before. She bullied other children. I learned that there was a series of YouTube videos in which she beat up other kids from the neighborhood on camera. To say that Janice was a challenge was an understatement. 3 weeks in a row, she was not allowed on our Friday field trip. I left message after message for her mother detailing her terrible behavior. I told her she was this close to being expelled. I secretly hoped she would get the hint and just stay home. I was concerned that I was enabling her bullying and endangering the other children by letting her come back every day. And yet, as sure as the sun would rise, Hurricane Janet would show up right on time the next day, dragging her brother up the street with one hand and jabbing her finger at anyone in her path with the other. Oh, Jesus would not play soccer with you, I wanted so badly to say to her. Jesus would weep if he saw your behavior. And I felt this acute tension as I struggled with the decision to expel Janice from camp. We were having this program ostensibly to remind her and the others that they were loved by God unconditionally. But day after day, I found myself saying things like, if you continue to act like that, you will no longer be welcome here. You have to be better, I told her. See, somewhere along the line, we adults transition from the world of children, where everyone gets a trophy, to the world of adults, where some people make the cut and others don't, where your behavior, looks, ability, intelligence, money, and class rank are vital predictors to your future success. Somewhere along the line, we come to understand that the world is neither fair nor safe. And we take great care instilling in our children the ideal that they are so loved just as they are, that Jesus is with them always, that they do not need to be afraid. And it happens to be true, and it's our responsibility as parents and indeed as the church to create and instill that understanding in them. But I think that often our actions betray another unspoken belief that the process of becoming an adult involves gradually qualifying those ideas and assuming the more sober understanding that the world is not impressed with you. The world owes you nothing, that it depends on you to rise to the top if you want to live a successful life. And so parents find themselves in this tricky situation of trying to teach both lessons to children that they love. Some parents teach this lesson by locking their children outside the house until they fight the neighborhood bully. Some parents teach this lesson by locking their children inside the house until they've written the perfect college essay. Relative privilege aside, the message is the same. You need to learn to climb to the top, or you risk being buried by others who will. And all of this, of course, is context, a roundabout explanation for the disciples' embarrassing behavior in Mark 9. The Gospel of Mark has a number of distinct patterns that recur again and again throughout the book, and one of them is this pattern where Jesus gives a fairly straightforward prediction of his own death and resurrection, and the disciples do not understand what he's talking about. In this case, they're too afraid to even reveal that they don't understand, which any teacher can tell you is not a great indicator of future improvement. The disciples are in over their heads at this point, but they are trying for all their worth to keep their poker faces, to make it seem like they are at the top of their game. And I think we can assume it was that bubbling sense of anxiety, that itch of insecurity that egged them into conflict on the long walk back to Capernaum. Once Jesus and his entourage reach the privacy of their house, he asks them, "What were you arguing about on the road?" And once again, they are silent because they are ashamed to admit that they were arguing about who was greater. So they say nothing. "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all," Jesus said, revealing once again that he knew what was in their hearts. Whoever wants to be first must be last. It's a concise and clear rebuke, not just of the disciples' posturing, but also of the logic of the world. And to illustrate his teaching, Jesus picks up a kid and says, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." Now that is pretty straightforward, but like the disciples, we have a hard time understanding. For example, the image of Jesus holding the child is quickly sentimentalized. CatholicSupply.com offers a Jesus and Child tapestry for $44.95 that depicts Jesus sitting with a child in the crook of a tree branch, and the light is soft, and there are flowers everywhere, and I almost have to use my insulin pump. It is that sweet. And I'm not singling out Catholics, by the way. Google Jesus and Child, and nearly every image you see will look like the cover of a Hallmark card. Hurricane Janice not pictured anywhere, I guarantee you. The fact is, Jesus and his contemporaries would have been far less sentimental about children than we are. For starters, consider the fact that 3 out of 10 Israelite children died before reaching adulthood due to hardship and disease and poverty. And the kids who did survive, along with the elderly and people with disabilities, were often considered to be economic burdens unless they were able to provide for their family. It was not unheard of for them to be left on the side of the road, no longer a part of the operating budget. So while it is lovely to see Jesus hold a child in his arms, it is more than a sentimental moment. Jesus isn't just caring for children because it's a sweet thing to do. He's aligning himself with the most powerless people in the community. He doesn't just love the child. Through the miracle of the incarnation, somehow he also is the child. Surely this childlike vulnerability was on Jesus' mind as they walked down the road that day, as he declared that he was going to be betrayed and arrested and killed. The matter-of-fact nature of his teaching reminds us that Jesus is choosing the way of vulnerability, but he still thinks like an adult. He understands full well how the world works, how the levers of power will turn against him, how the machine of empire will snuff him out. He does not operate under the illusion that the world is either safe or fair. He understands these things and chooses to stand with the child anyway. He chooses vulnerability and solidarity over the arms race. He chooses love. About a week and a half before the end of summer, Janice and her brother stopped attending camp. And after 4.5 weeks of nearly perfect and calamitous attendance, they vanished. And I can't tell you that I wasn't a little bit relieved, but I still did my due diligence. I placed several calls to her mother asking if she'd be finishing the summer with us, but none of those phone calls were returned. I tried the emergency contact number and aunt on the other side of the city. And a woman answered the phone. She was embarrassed to say this, she said, but the children had been taken by Child Protective Services. A neighbor had called and reported them after realizing at some point that Janice and her brother had been living alone in their house for some time, possibly weeks. And when the agents went in to interview and retrieve them, they reported that they found little to no food in the house. Their mother, who was an addict, had simply hit the road for reasons that remained unclear. And it seems that they were surviving on the breakfast and the lunch that they were receiving at our summer camp. I have to tell you, I shed tears over that phone call. And that terrible behavior and the fighting and the cursing, none of it spoke louder to me than the thought of 10-year-old Janice and her 6-year-old brother foregoing dinner. The thought of her setting an alarm clock and rising early to wake her brother, dress him, and walk the city blocks to the only place she knew where they would find food, a church that seemed to believe that God loves everyone. It occurred to me that Janice knew some things about love that I did not. Of course Jesus would love her. Of course he would take her into his arms and say, "This one matters to me. When you show love to this one, you show love to me." See, Jesus didn't choose the child because it was innocent or cute or the right thing to do. We are partial to those interpretations because we're so invested in the idea that as adults we can be good enough all by ourselves. Jesus chose the child because we are all children. Jesus chose the child because we need to know. He chose the child because not one of us is too insignificant. Not one of us is alone, even in our suffering, perhaps especially in our suffering. And what would it look like, by the way, to bring that understanding of our way of being into the world, to our public policy, to our standards for public education? It would look, I submit, fairly different from how it looks now when there are more photo ops with children than people who are serious about justice for children. So when I find myself irritated by soccer Jesus and all the other cutesy representations of Jesus and the children, when it doesn't seem to represent the muck of the world as I've seen it, as Janice and so many others have experienced it, I remember that the most common statue featured in churches around the world is Christ on the cross. Jesus, who was an adult and understood the consequences of his actions. Jesus, who forsook power as the world understands it and embraced the weakness of a child only to unleash a deep and enduring love. I can only imagine what the website description for such a statue might read. It might read, "To remind children that Jesus is with them always. A contemporary statue for today's youth. Jesus is with us in everything we do."